If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix Lafay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
We are here.
We're here.
Here being a very nice place.
Yes, today has been a gorgeous, amazingly beautiful day.
It has. We were noticing it as there was no rain.
No.
And
first time all week.
I know. And very little, well, flooding where we were at.
Yeah.
So it makes for a nice feeling.
All of a sudden the sun comes out and it's warm. You actually can take off your jacket and you remember, oh, yeah, there is more than wetness constantly falling from the sky. Hooray.
Yes, yes. So I know that we at the West Coast have had drought. Now we have rain.
Yes.
Or wet.
Yes.
But so how was your week?
It's funny. We ask each other this question every week.
Yeah.
And every week I go, oh, yeah. How was my week? What did I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to remember what I do.
I'm the older one here. No. You're supposed to have that quick memory.
Well, you know what it is? It's because today was not my normal flow, so I feel super discombobulated.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, Fridays are the day that I work halfway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still work, and we do the radio show. And,
right.
But it's kind of my day to work easily and to take long breaks and to kind of, you know, screw around and not try so hard. That's
right.
Kind of how I try to set up my Fridays.
Uh-huh.
And today was not that day. I had, you know, I still have to wake up early and take the kid to school and
right.
That whole fun thing.
Right.
But then I actually had to, you know, get dressed and ready and not just be bleary-eyed in my PJs like I normally do. But I went over to Lucky Mojo today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one of their wonderful candle readers who's out for medical-ish stuff. And so they needed a little bit of help. And I went in and read some candles today. And it's what I used to do when I worked at Lucky Mojo. So it was, you know, like the good old days. But it's hard work. And it's all in front of the computer and doing
right.
divination all day. And it's
right.
exhausting. So I feel... I feel a little discombobulated and a little tired and my neck hurts, you know.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, how about you?
Oh, well, it was a very busy week. I mean, I had a lot of clients, and it made for consistency in terms of I get up and I'm at the computer, but then I go away and I go do the readings and I come back and blah, 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 blah. By Wednesday, though, I began to get, you know, a little bit more cranky, And I noticed that there may have been a flow, because the first part of the week, my clients were, they had certain things, and of course you deal with them. But it's the middle of the week, I was like getting people that were having, they really needed TLC mommy care, and it was hard.
Yeah.
Because by then it was like, okay, and you find that mommy deep inside and bring her back out, and she's kicking and screaming, going, But, and then, it was preparing for this show and starting to get excited about the particular subject, and I thought, wow, this is okay, and truthfully, my friend Elma did a soul retrieval on me, because I've been a little bit disconnected from some things after I got back from Arkansas, where I was at for the holidays, and I was beginning to notice that, so I felt there was a little bit of personal care.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling a lot better.
Good.
And, like here. And then, of course, waiting to do the show, getting everything prepared and chit-chatting with Phoenix before we get started. And we actually have a audience.
Studio audience.
Studio audience, yes, here.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yeah. Any random noises from the background or voices coming from afar?
Yes, we have studio audience. So, but obviously, our subject tonight is mirror.
Mirror.
Yes. So it's almost like I wanted to first say mirror, mirror on the wall. It's kind of a lead-in that is so cliche now. But, and it's interesting because I went hunting all over my house for the different mirrors that I use or have used, or more specific spiritual purposes. Because we have mirrors. We have mirrors in our bathroom.
Right.
We have mirrors that we put on the wall. Yep. We have all these different things, and of course that's part of it. But unfortunately, we're not looking at that. So I couldn't bring those and put them to make the altar.
Yeah.
I figured I needed more appropriate things. So I will be posting that picture after the show so people can enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, I'm ready.
It's funny when we picked mirrors as sort of the next in our series of magical objects, right? We've been trying to go through the elements and the different magical tools, and so that's where the mirror is falling in the magical tool set.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, gosh, I don't know if we're gonna have enough to talk about.
She echoes my thoughts.
But then I started doing research, because I think both have our more modern take and our modern idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then every week we do research and history lessons on the origins of these things. And I was really surprised by how much history there is around this.
I know.
Tool. And if you think about it, this is one of the first things that struck me about the mirror. It's a pretty modern tool, even for the mundane world.
Right.
Right? The reflective surfaces, sure. Yes, but the mirror, as we know it, is really not that old.
No.
So it's no wonder having a reflection be such an amazingly magical idea, because for our very ancient ancestors, the only time that was happening was when they caught themselves on the surface of the water at just the right angle, at just the right time. Like, think of how long people didn't know what they looked like.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
And obviously, for those of us who put makeup on and have this concept of image, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
No makeup. I think the concept of not having a makeup mirror to put makeup on, that would be scary.
Right.
Right.
Well, and then again, we get to look at history and our ancestors, and, for those times where the women who needed to be primped or were, who got to be primped and whatnot, they had people to do that for them.
Exactly.
They weren't doing that themselves, and the woman who couldn't afford someone to do that for them wouldn't have been doing it for themselves
either.
Exactly.
So, obviously, it's opened it up to the masses.
Yes.
So, but it has been a very interesting education. There, as you say, there are things that we know, but there are things of how this actually came about. Yes, it's a very ancient concept of your image,
yeah,
in terms of either in a polished surface of a stone or the water or something.
Right.
And
metal bowl.
A bowl, whatever. But to actually think of the mirror we see in our world every day and take, mm-hmm, you know, absolutely no consideration about how it got to where it is,
yeah,
is very, very new.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, in terms of history, I think what it was the Renaissance was when it really started to have the actual mirror,
yeah,
with a backing, a
right,
foil backing of,
right,
of gold or silver. And then they eventually went on to tin and, you know, different aspects. But it was usually just polished stones they,
yep,
kind of got to, or polished metals.
Right.
And then, of course, the one thing that I was kind of reading, and it was kind of sort of humorous, is that when it happened that they got these beautiful glass mirrors, they,
yeah,
became huge.
Sure.
And the people that had them had, like, halls of,
right,
them and walls of them,
right,
and it was always this grandeur.
Right. It would have been a status symbol.
Exactly.
Right? If you could afford to have a mirror, you might as well go for the big.
Right.
Right. And have,
right,
a whole ballroom lined with mirrors,
which explains places like Versailles and places that,
yeah,
have, when you go into more of the castles, or where you would go into those larger homes,
yeah,
well, large homes,
yes,
there would be a whole gallery that would be just walls of mirrors. And I was, you know, when I did visit Europe and I did see some of these things, I kept, you know, scratching my head like, well, that's really nice,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, because I didn't have the history of the mirror,
right,
to understand what that actually meant for that time.
Right, right. And, we're talking about the mirror as a very mundane,
uh-huh,
tool here, but it has magical aspects to it as well, and it has spellcraft aspects,
uh-huh,
to it, which is sort of, you know, the other tools have mundane purposes. You know, we've,
right,
talked about the athame. It's a knife. You use it to do things.
Right. Cut food. Do,
right,
things, chicken, things like that.
Right. But, and here we have the mirror, which is kind of different than all of the other magical tools. It was a status symbol. It was something that only the very wealthy had.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of becomes this esoteric, occult thing,
mm-hmm,
that only specific magicians who were trained in the arts would use for,
mm-hmm,
scrying and seeing into the future and doing divination.
Right.
Right? Like John Dee.
Yeah.
The official magician of Queen Elizabeth I,
right,
who used a black obsidian mirror,
mm-hmm,
to do divination and give advice to the queen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you see this tool of divination, and then as we go along, and we'll talk more about this, I think, in a little bit, but it also becomes a tool of spells.
Exactly.
And working spellcraft.
And it became more of a process in terms of the spiritual nature. And I think, personally, from what I was able to gather, that it became more widespread in the Victorian time. But that was also because in the Victorian time it became more accessible,
right,
to the lower classes than,
yeah,
the upper crust.
Right, right, absolutely.
And so magicians and witches and people that could find the mirror, they would start using it as opposed to the polished metal or the stones or things,
right,
like that.
Right,
so
much more convenient.
I know.
Takes way less polishing.
I know, and just think of those big stones you have to lug around, you know, or,
yeah,
prop up.
It's really hard to fit it in your purse. Super inconvenient. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, but mirrors have been around all over the world, so it's something that we have many cultures all over the world that have had it. There's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to let you talk about the myth of Narcissus.
Yeah, and the Greek myth, there is a very beautiful creature named Narcissus.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees his reflection in a pool of water and becomes so enamored with this beautiful reflection.
Mm-hmm.
He falls in love with this reflection. You know, and the deeper piece here is not recognizing it's himself, and, you know, you seeing your own beauty and all of these very sweet and lovely things. But what ends up happening is he becomes so enamored with its reflection, he actually tries to possess it and falls into the water and drowns.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's where the word narcissistic comes from, is you're so enamored with yourself that you can't actually see reality.
Right.
Or, you know, you think you're the only reflection in the pool.
I call that self-absorbed as well, but,
right.
You know,
right.
That's true when you consider that.
Right.
And, of course, we have the Japanese
mm-hmm.
have a myth about the mirror that is given to Amaterasu when
right.
she is sad and to show her beautiful reflection
right.
with the sun goddess.
Yes, yes. The return of the sun is brought from a mirror.
Right.
Yeah.
So that process, I mean, and the Hindu traditions have mirrors as good luck and keeping the evil eye away and putting
yeah.
it on clothes for dowries. And, I mean, we've got all of the concepts of why mirrors or reflective surfaces are important.
Yeah.
Either to bring in good luck or to reflect negativity.
Right, right. There's also a god in the native Mexican tradition,
uh-huh.
and I don't know specifically what region of Mexico, so I apologize that I don't have that information. His name is Tezcatlipoca, and he uses a magical mirror.
Uh-huh.
He is able to see into the future. He's
right.
able to show you truth.
Right.
But he is the possessor of a magical mirror.
Uh-huh. And isn't that the one with the smoky mirror?
Yes, right.
That was, and back in my heyday when I was reading many different people, I think there was one author who talked about the smoky mirror,
yeah.
and I cannot remember who exactly it was, but it was about stories about people learning how to find their magic, but part of it was finding the smoky mirror and going through the process.
Well, and that's interesting, too, totally unrelated to mirrors, but there is something about the smoke or the mist descending,
mm-hmm.
and that's what takes you to the other world,
right?
Right. That's the gateway
right.
to travel between realms, is
mm-hmm.
the smoke or the
mm-hmm.
mist descending,
mm-hmm.
And that is a portal. So how very interesting.
Yes.
That's a new little tidbit of information
I know,
to me.
I know, and here we are with, so mirrors.
Yeah.
Mirrors are, they are a portal.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we have learned as, I don't want to even call them superstitions, but they are, but their lore about mirrors comes around death.
Yeah.
And the concept of covering a mirror in the house where there is a death,
yeah.
either in the house where there is a death or there is a person who has died that is part of that household, is to cover the mirror.
Right.
Or turn it to the wall. And this was because it was a portal
mm-hmm.
to the realm of the dead or to any outside realm other than the physical realm. And it was so that, I guess, we would not lose ourselves in the mirror and go hanging out with the dead, or the dead would stay with us.
Right, right. There is this belief that the mirror can possess a soul,
mm-hmm.
right? So, again, it's a portal, so when your spirit leaves your body, it can go into the mirror and, you know, whatever else. And you've seen, you know, they use a mirror in movies
yes.
to test to see if someone's
yeah.
still breathing. And it was believed, not that ancient superstition, was that you weren't seeing the breath. You were actually seeing the spirit.
Right.
And the condensation our breath would leave on a mirror, if we get scientific,
mm-hmm.
right, we know what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, it was believed that was a symbol of your spirit.
Right.
In your body.
Right.
And, yeah, you had to be very cautious after someone died.
Mm-hmm.
The liminal spaces, the doorways to other worlds were open,
right.
and it was much more dangerous, it was considered much more dangerous
mm-hmm.
for other family members or other household members. If someone had died, you needed to be careful
right.
for a little while.
Right.
So you didn't follow in their footsteps or get sucked into that portal with
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Exactly. And obviously, as we got into Victorian times, they talk about the velvet. It was like
mm-hmm.
very, there were certain do's and don'ts. You have to have velvet that covers the,
yeah.
the mirror. You know,
right. And certain time frames, it needs to stay
yes,
covered.
Stay covered. And so there was that process. It got into its own rigidity. But in the ancient times, it was just basically, you know, you didn't want to keep that portal open and
yeah.
you didn't want to lose yourself in it and you didn't want to have them get stuck. You wanted them to go on their way.
Right, Right, and you can kind of see a thread. If you go back to the story of Narcissus, you know, you can see this thread. Like, okay, it's not just about your reflection. It's about this portal.
Right.
And it's not so safe.
Right.
Not so safe.
Right.
So having a clear understanding of protection, a clear understanding of what it is to open a doorway to another world, and being clear about what you're doing in
right.
that process. But yeah.
Right. And obviously, as we say, the broken mirror.
Yeah.
That was what I was going to have you, because you had said that was something that, you know, you said, well, I've got the broken mirror. And I'm like, yes, you could go for that.
Yeah. Well, I think most folks have heard if you break a mirror, you get 7 years of bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hold that superstition. I've actually seen some really powerful magic and spell work done of intentionally breaking mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's to shatter illusions or to release what no longer serves or what have you. So I think breaking mirrors is actually, it can be a good thing if it's done with intention. But the thought behind if you break a mirror, you get 7 years of bad luck is because you've broken a portal of where your soul is connected.
Exactly.
So breaking that mirror is actually causing damage to your soul, to your spirit. And that's sort of that superstition, again, behind the mirror as this place where your soul resides, or it can, you know, steal a piece of you.
Right.
And also by shattering the mirror, now you have all of these portals.
Right. All these little shards of portals that have been put into effect. And again, there are ways to look at doing that and working it for a positive magic process.
Yeah.
And we'll probably have mirrors too down the road. But what becomes interesting is that when that sort of was what I was listening to, and obviously I had read about some of it, is that we have the big thing about vampires cannot show a reflection.
Right.
Because they're soulless.
Right.
They do not have a soul. So when you look at yourself in a mirror, you are seeing your soul. You are a souled being.
Yeah.
And so there is that. And I know that we've got a lot of great literature and not so great literature written about the vampires and other creatures that do not have souls and
right.
all the rest of it. So it's, again, the fairy tales. We can walk right through the fairy tales, which came in with the witches using the mirrors, Snow White, you know, all the different things where you have the mirror that talks to you.
Right. But. Well, and the thing you said at the very beginning, the mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's Snow White. The story of Snow White is chock full of mythology that is older than that story, right?
Yes.
Chock full of it. And we, you know, we can talk about all of that at another time, but there's all sorts of hidden goddess imagery in the story, all sorts of magical imagery hidden in the story. But the mirror is, it shows you the future. It shows you other information. It shows you other places where you can't physically be right now.
Right.
It's a magical tool. And, you know, in the cartoon in some of the more fairy tale versions of the story, there is a face that appears
in the mirror.
And
yes.
Provides the information and
right.
Oh, I'm sorry, Queen, but you've got competition. Right.
And not exactly what you want to hear, right?
Right. And there is some traditions in certain parts of the world where you can capture a spirit in a mirror.
Exactly.
And then that spirit becomes
your servant.
Your servant, right. Like folks who are familiar with the Hoodoo Root Work Hour, right, Conjurman Ali is the co-host of that show. Conjurman Ali has a spirit. A djinn.
Sorry.
In his carnelian ring, and he uses that spirit to get information.
Right.
The spirit and he are connected.
Right.
Right. So the same concept can be done with a mirror. Personally, this is serious, dangerous magic, so don't just start playing with this concept.
Right.
I would not encourage people to go out and start trying to capture spirits in there.
No.
Don't do that.
Definitely. It's one of those that it would be much better set up if you could, you know, be trained and work with someone who actually can teach you the boundaries, because like anything, of this nature, you're dealing with like what we talk about in Ouija boards and things. You pull in things without any kind of preparation or protection or guards or wards, as we call them.
Right. Right.
You do have problems.
Right. And in Conjurman Ali's situation, he is from he's born into a tradition from the Middle East that works with jinn specifically, and this is a tradition he's been raised in. It's it's part of his ancestry. It's been something he's worked with his entire life.
Exactly.
So he's immersed in that culture and that tradition.
Right. Right.
So he has a really the understanding of it for him is beyond intellectual.
Right.
So I feel, you know, if working with a spirit or connecting to another realm and having a sort of spirit ally, if you will, in a mirror, if that idea appeals to you, I highly encourage you to learn more about it, to find a teacher or someone who has done that kind of work and can lead you through the process or train you specifically on how to do that work.
Right.
This is not something to dabble.
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that, to kind of, you know, because we're coming on to almost our break time, but in terms of history, we had, the Victorians were very much into the spiritualist process. They had, it was a specific room. They would get a huge, large mirror, and it would be dark, and they would basically, you would go into this huge room with this huge mirror, and it would be all dark, and there would be little candle
things. Dramatic. The Victorians
are were really so dramatic. And they would go ahead and do scrying, they would do, which we'll talk about in the, you know, after the break. But they would go in and they would get into the meditation and the scrying and the, that process. And so, you know, the Pasquale Beverly Randolph in the 1800s, there's a lot of books on this. So there is that. You can go with more of the, we're going into more of what we will be talking about after the break to go into the concepts of how to use mirrors as magic, in magic. And the one that I found fascinating was Franz Barden, and he was a Czech spiritualist, Czechoslovakian spiritualist during the time of the Nazis, and he had a lot of this information, and he basically refused to help the Nazis in their cause of, you know, using spiritual and metaphysical things, and so they put him into a concentration camp, and he did survive and went on to write many more books afterwards, but
For folks who may not be aware of this piece of history, the Nazis were very much interested in magic and spellcraft, and there's lots of stories about the, you know, the secret magical battles that happened during World War II, especially between Britain and the Germans, and there are some very famous witches who were doing battle magic to defend the shores of Britain, which never got invaded.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is that to be pointed out, and at some time we may go deeper into that process.
It's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Yes.
And one other piece of little history that fascinated me is that they have the Japanese, bless their souls, made these wonderful, what they call mirror armor, and what they were is huge round discs and of mirror, and then they were attached together, and they were set up to go over the regular armor, and it would go over their chest and their back and their arms to deflect not only the metal things that were coming at them, but it was to keep them from being psychically attacked.
Sure.
And I thought, now, you know, we talk about wearing medallions and things like that when we do things, but that was a whole concept of armor.
Very wise.
Very wise.
Very wise. We also have, again, as advisors to royalty, King Henry IV had a confessor, which I don't like that title. It sounds dangerous or scary. Pierre Cotton was his name. It's very well written that he would use a magical mirror to scry in, to do seeing in order to uncover plots against the king.
Oh, dear.
My imagination tells a story of a man with a lot of power and the ear of the king.
Yes.
And basically smiting all of his enemies because he's looking in his magic mirror and saying, oh, watch out for that guy, watch out for that guy, watch out for that guy.
Exactly. Sort of more of a personalized use of the process than an actual.
Right. And then Pythagoras is also have said to use a mirror for magical purposes.
Uh-huh.
It was believed that he would use the moonlight to reflect moonlight into in order to reveal the future.
Right.
Which is just lovely and romantic.
I know.
And the Romans also used mirrors for reading the future,
mm-hmm.
and it was called The Speculari.
Yes.
Speculari. It's a fancy word.
That's a fancy word, and I think it gets used again down the road. I think the Victorians reset it up, and then it kind of gets put out, because I remember reading something in one of my books, maybe it was Doreen Virtue, or Valente, Doreen Valente,
yeah.
and she uses that word. So it got picked up again and recycled for...
The mirror, speaking of Doreen Valente, the mirror is a very powerful magical tool for protection, because
mm-hmm.
it is a tool of... It reflects, but it also deflects,
right?
So imagine holding a mirror, not that you're looking at it, but you're facing it outward, like the armor that
mm-hmm.
Elvira just described with the Japanese, right? You can deflect.
Mm-hmm.
And Doreen Valiente has written a bit about self-defense magically. And there's a lot of information that she put out there about that. And there's another name. And Psychic Self-Defense is the name of her book.
The one that wrote Sea Priestess.
Yep. And she writes a lot about mirrors as well. And the name will come to me.
Somewhere in the unfortunate. See, we have our audience.
Thank you. Yeah. So there is a lot of, the occultists from the early 1900s, they wrote a lot about psychic self-defense and how to keep yourself protected.
Right.
And mirrors feature big. And
they do. They really do. And it's been something that has been used straight from Egyptian into Greece and Rome and all the way through and across continents. It is consistently used. And something I did find out, there's a convex
mm-hmm.
mirror, or a polished disc, that a particular monk who is sort of like to the Dalai Lama, and he is like, he will go and scry in it to give messages to the Dalai Lama.
Interesting.
Yes, I kind of thought that was kind of a trip, but I'm like, oh, even the Dalai Lama uses something like this.
So there's a lot of systems in the East
mm-hmm.
where they use mirrors, the concave ones, right, that are
mm-hmm.
that are like a little bowl, and then the convex ones that are
like a bowl, belly.
Yeah, like a belly. And they're used for reflection and deflection, right? Sending away
uh-huh.
the yucky crap that you don't want, the jealousy,
uh-huh.
negative feelings,
uh-huh.
bad spirits.
Right.
And then calling in the good things that you want to receive, and you put them in strategic places in your home, so that the reflective, the stuff you want to call in gets called in, and the stuff you want to keep out is kept out.
Kept out.
But
right.
that's used a lot in different Asian cultures,
uh-huh.
those strategically placed mirrors.
Right. Because the convex, they call it the sorcerer's eye, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they talk about it because of the way it looks like an eyeball.
It does.
You know. So obviously that is another one, or the witch's eye, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say? We get our name in there somehow. But, I mean, it's very interesting because obviously we've talked about, you know, concave, convex. We'll talk about, like, round and square, and there are some things that will be able to be really quickly described as to how to use them, and then we will wind up planning on giving you a little bit about the magical process of mirrors, and then a homework assignment.
Yeah, you're getting off hard tonight. You have homework.
We're going to give you
homework. There's one more thing.
Yes.
I have my little notes here, and I'm just going through to make sure I don't miss anything. So apparently the witches of Thessaly used mirrors and blood for divination.
Ooh.
So, I imagine there was a lot of divination with blood and entrails and all that kind of stuff back in the day. So I imagine the mirror played into that somehow. I don't
mm-hmm.
have any specific rituals or anything, but I find that combination very interesting.
Maybe. Well, I mean, think of the blood, and then later on they use ink.
Right.
So a liquidy surface, but it was not reflective.
Yeah,
it pulls you in.
Well, right, and that's the thing. If you are using a mirror and blood, the blood's going to obscure the surface, so you can't really see in
mm-hmm.
as a portal. So it's,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
That's what I find so interesting about it. Because you're messing up your tool.
You're mushing up your tool with some stuff that maybe it's a different thing you're going for. And, again, sometimes traditions are, you know, we have our standard traditions that have come down from generations and decades and things, and then there are things that you start learning and experimenting with.
Right.
And with that, we are letting you have your break.
Go get a drink.
Go get a drink.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bit of Boxy with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursday 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Aha, and we're back. And obviously, just as a beginning, we are going to give a little bit of warning that one of our audience members gave a conjure warning. So never conjure anything you can't banish. Mm. And I think that's a big thing that people that get into magic for whatever reasons they want and start going need to remember, whether they use a mirror or anything else.
Yes, it's good advice in all areas of life, really.
Yeah. Well, the old saying, it kind of follows, be careful for what you wish for.
Yeah.
For when you get it, you
exactly.
Not really know
yeah.
What you...
You're not sure what you're asking for all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, but then again. So, now we have some more practical things to
right.
Talk about. So, let's see. Round mirrors or oval mirrors are like the eye, so you can use it for love work. And protection and bestowing, you know, blessings and communicating with loved ones and harmony.
Nice.
So that was something I kind of thought, well, that you know, round and oval, that, you know, it's a female kind of a thing.
I suppose if you had a heart-shaped mirror, that would also be good for love work.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, think of maybe how the shape of the mirror for what you want to do in terms of magic or, well, we'll talk about scrying, obviously.
Right.
A little.
I like this idea. I'm curious about the other shapes because that's something I never, ever considered before.
No, I mean, I just thought of mirrors as mirrors.
Yeah, I really like the idea of the shape having an extra.
And they talk about the square, the rectangle is about strength and balance and because of the right angles.
Sure.
And putting things into a positive, meaning having control over something.
Yeah. Right.
And being more authoritative and grounded and solid. So, you know, using the four elements. So it would be something like expelling any negative energy.
Nice.
That you don't want. Raising your self-esteem. Again, that's like grounding and bringing something positive in and manifesting legal matters.
So
I thought
square.
That was, you know, again, square.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And basically it would be communing with a friend instead of just anybody. See, now if you use communication with a loved one for the round, communicating with a friend or someone who you're, you know, associated with that doesn't have that
right.
Love interest process. And just major strengths and bringing that in.
Mm.
And basically the octagonal, which is that eight-sided one, not necessarily the one they use for the bagua, but this would be for attracting or expanding, and it would be energy and power. So it was because it's four, two fours.
Okay.
The primary and the secondary directions.
Neat.
And also the wheel of the year.
Sure.
So the 8 points, you know, the eight
yep.
sections.
Yep, that makes sense.
And they talk about boosting power, strength, balance, stability, health, prosperity, and goodwill.
Mm.
So that kind of made me feel like, oh, well, now, of course, finding all these mirror sizes, squares and rectangles you can do, and rounds and ovals.
Yeah.
Hearts are a little more difficult.
Yeah. You just have to cut it yourself.
Yeah, that's something. There we go, a whole other section of people they could get out there.
Yep.
And then, of course, the concave, which was a bowl, was to absorb, trap negative energies,
mm-hmm.
and is also used for scrying.
Right.
And then the convex, which would be the belly, talks about repelling negative energies.
It bounced right off.
Bounced right off. Yep. Bing. You know? I mean, I hate to, you know, my mind just suddenly went to pregnant woman, a woman with a
right.
big belly, and you sort of bounce right off
yeah, yeah.
belly.
Yeah.
But,
that's what I thought, too.
Oh, dear. We're on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Right off the belly.
Bounce off the belly. And, of course, the Bagua mirror, which is a specific eight-sided mirror, which is basically a convex mirror is set in a wood frame
right.
that has eight sides.
It has sacred symbols,
on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is definitely set to what they call to get rid of poison arrows. So it's set to be put as a deflection, but it's something that is so powerful they suggest that you do not use it on the inside of the house, that you only use it on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I imagine, you know, if you're using mirrors inside of your house, you also need to be cautious about reverberation, right?
Right.
If you're deflecting or shooting energy around, it can sort of hit this and bounce,
mm-hmm.
and hit that and bounce off
mm-hmm.
of that. So it is smart to have things strategically placed outdoors or out windows or openings.
Right.
And one of the superstitions I've sort of held is you're not supposed to have a mirror that shines out of your front door.
Uh-huh.
You know, so thinking about these things, like where are the mirrors in your home and what do they reflect? And,
right.
You know, take
right.
all of that into consideration when you put things around.
And it comes to, and then, of course, mirrors are very consistently used for feng shui or balancing energy. And one of the things I was taught when I did do that whole process is that it's a way to balance energy outside. So if you place it where it's a window to slow the energy down.
Yeah.
So it doesn't crash in.
Right.
Just like they use, you know, the crystals and things. But that's placement, and that's a whole other section of conversation.
There was a book you were using for some of this research, the Witch's Mirror. Is that right?
The Witch's Mirror.
And the plug.
I will give it a plug. I have to get it back up on my favorite thing called
your magical device.
My magical device, and hang on. So it is.
There's a whole series that Llewellyn, the publishing house, has put out, and there's like we've talked about it before. The Witch's Athame,
mm-hmm.
Witch's Wand, the Witch's Broom, the Witch's Cauldron is being released nowish, I think.
I think, yes.
And
yes.
Elvira found the Witch's Mirror.
Which is called The Witch's Mirror, The Craft, Lore, and Magic of the Looking Glass by Mickey, M-I-C-K-I-E, Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
A whole book dedicated to this magical tool if you are looking for more information.
Definitely.
Yep.
Definitely. So with that, we might want to talk now about spell work with regards to mirrors.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about how some of these ancient historical magical magician figures used mirrors as a form of divination, right? So one of the spell things or magical things you can do with your mirror is scry.
Uh-huh.
S-C-R-Y. Scry.
Scry.
Scry. And this is a divinatory process of using an object in which to divine the future or gain information or an insight on a situation.
Uh-huh.
Just like the tarot or runes or throwing bones or what have you. Scrying can be done in a flame. It can be done on the surface of a bowl of water.
Uh-huh.
And very traditionally, it can be done in a mirror,
uh-huh.
often a black mirror
uh-huh.
or a mirror made of obsidian.
Right. Right.
And also a crystal ball, right? When you've that very classic fortune teller crystal ball, that's
yes.
scrying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So most often what you find in modern witchiness is folks talking about scrying with their mirror.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And that's a thing, and it's common.
Right.
In the pagan community in the witchy world.
Right.
To scry with your mirror. But there's also a bunch of other stuff. Oh, and I want to say the traditional words for that is captromancy.
Yes.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
I love that.
Captromancy. Or crystallomancy if you're using like a crystal ball or other type of stone.
Right.
You know, I like to pick words. Just throw that in there. But there is other things you can do with a mirror
mm-hmm.
for spell work for yourself, for other people, for healing,
mm-hmm.
for yourself, for other people, all kinds of fun stuff. And one of those things that is pretty common, especially in the hoodoo world, is to make a mirror box.
Aha. Yes, it is.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I got all excited and tingly. A mirror box basically is a box. It can be a small box, a shoe box, a box box. And what you're going to do is put mirrors all the way on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of this is to capture the individual, because it's usually an individual that you're doing this with, because you have a poppet.
Yeah.
So you'll take the poppet, and a lot of times this can be self-defense because this person is doing a lot of negative things to you, your family, your dog, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will make your poppet, and you will stuff it with certain herbs, and then you will tie it, and then you will exercise out, and if you want to put their picture on it as their face, but you'll stick it in the mirror box,
right.
And you'll close it up and basically seal it,
right.
And then you bury it.
Right.
It's like a coffin.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking about binding magic here to give it another name.
True.
But the reason I like this kind of magical work is because it's reflective.
Uh-huh.
So if you're concerned that someone is intentionally causing harm in your life,
uh-huh.
and you do this work to put up a mirror so that they can see what the impact that they're having on the world
right.
or on you, that's what's going to happen. And if they're sending you love and sweetness and they really deeply care about you, that's what they're going to get back.
Mm-hmm. So it's also how you put the puppet in there.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you do it with a lot of binding and a lot of things like that, you're trying to keep them away from you, but then you're also, you know, wanting them to see their negative behavior.
Right.
So, I mean, there is that. There is one that you can use as a protection
mm-hmm.
where, for instance, you put your family in a box, but you have the mirrors on the outside.
Right.
So that it is deflecting the negativity that is coming towards you.
Right.
A lot of times there is ways to use the mirror as a deflection in terms of literally putting it on the house. Outside
mm-hmm.
of your house on the walls or on the inside if you have an apartment, but you would face those mirrors towards the wall because you want it to face out.
Right.
As a protection.
Right. And there are ways you can put mirrors outside, even if you do live in an apartment, that are a little more tricky or sneaky,
mm-hmm.
you know, by putting them in your window ledges that
right.
they're still catching the reflection.
Right.
Or if you do have a small little patio that is big enough to fit a potted plant.
Uh-huh.
You can tuck them into the side of the potted plant
right.
or rest them on the ledge of a plant or what have you. So there's lots of ways to inconspicuously use a mirror as
uh-huh.
a protection uh-huh. outside of your home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the things, and this, again, is one that you have to be careful with when you're using it in a car, is, you know, not to hang something that will be that reflective on your, which is illegal anyway, by the way, to hang things from your mirror.
Yeah.
But you can do it in such a way that maybe you put it in the glove box so that
mm-hmm.
it's out, so you have a reflective surface that is reflecting.
Right.
And you're traveling with it.
Right. There's also a lot of folklore around mirror balls.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you can, I have some Christmas ornaments, actually, that are tiny little mirror balls.
Yes.
But if you're having trouble sleeping or if you've been visited by spirits at night that make you feel unsafe or uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
or, you know, anytime you're getting bad juju when you're asleep,
uh-huh.
you can hang a mirror ball in your room.
Uh-huh.
And the belief is that the negative spirit, the bad spirit, will get so caught up in looking at the mirror
Ooh.
And all these little mirrors
mm-hmm.
that they end up spending their time looking at that and forget about bothering you.
I like that idea.
It's like leaving the Bible open.
Right.
If you're having bad dreams, you open the Bible and you put it under your bed, mm-hmm. and the bad spirit, the witch, who's going to come and haunt you at night,
right.
will be so busy reading the Bible because it's a fascinating tale
right.
that you won't have bad dreams.
Well, there you
Same
go.
Concept.
Same concept.
Yeah.
So I like that. It's kind of a cutie.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, so you can, you know, you have the deflection. You can work it so that sometimes you don't need a physical mirror. You can envision.
Mm-hmm.
a reflective surface.
Yeah, there's also some real, actually, Professor Porterfield taught me to use foil.
Mm-hmm.
Use a little bit of foil, and mm-hmm. that way it's very inconspicuous.
Oh, yes, yeah. And, you know, the shiny side, not the dull
right.
side.
Right, yeah, on the dull side, you fold it up like a petition paper, so you put herbs or or charms or amulet in the foil and on the dull side, and then you fold it up, tuck it in strategic places. And so the reflective side is outward.
Right.
Protective stuff is on the inside.
Right. Nice. So mirrors are traditional mirrors. They can also be reflective surfaces like we've talked about, you know, as what the ancients had, which is aluminum foil for our present
modern day.
And actually the mirrors that we have are backed by aluminum.
Yeah.
So in a way.
And you can, in that process of scrying that we talked about, you can ask for visions of allies, of your spirit animal, of a future love.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it to do all kinds of visioning.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ways of incorporating spell work with scrying.
Right.
Setting up this. The right herbs, the right incense, the right candles, and setting the stage so when you go into that trance-like state, when you go into that, for me, scrying is a little bit more of an intense process of reading than reading my tarot cards.
Right.
Right? I feel like I need to be prepared to scry, like a ritual.
It is.
Scrying is more like a ritual, at least for me. I know there are lots of readers out there who can just do it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it feels more sacred. It feels like more of a magical practice. So setting the stage, making yourself prepared, and then asking, you know, what do I need to see right now? Or show me the spirit ally that's trying to connect with me or whatever.
Right.
And again, setting up proper protection so you're not just opening the gateway.
Just any old spirit coming bouncing in.
Right. Create a magical circle like we've talked about before, called the elements and your guides and guards. And the other thing I would suggest, and in the fall I taught a workshop called the Beauty Pentacle. And we used mirrors a lot. This is a lot of internal work, but connecting to not only your beauty as a individual special human being,
right,
but seeing the beauty out in the world, especially right now.
Oh, yes.
A lot of things that are ugly out there. And sometimes we need reminders about the beauty in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The mirror is a really cool way to do it.
Right.
And one of my teachers taught me to use a mirror to charge objects. So I have a mirror that I got at the dollar store.
Mm-hmm.
It's pink. And I decorated it for specifically for the use of beauty.
Right.
So I wrote little affirmations around the mirror. I've glued some rose petals to the back and some little rhinestone things so it's all blingy and beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And I have it on an altar with an Aphrodite statue. And I anointed it with love oil. So it's very much Aphrodite-type energy. But when I need something to remind me of the beauty in the world, or if I'm working on something in that realm, like I have this crystal, this stone, very specific stone that I sometimes wear in my bra when I need a little pick-me-up. And when I first started charging the stone, I sat it on the mirror, and I let it just sit there. And the stone is charging the mirror, and the mirror is charging the stone.
Right.
And then I wear that stone, and it helps me stay connected to the beauty in the world. This same teacher who taught me to use mirrors like that, she also taught me that you can store information in a mirror. So if you are reading something and you put that passage over the mirror, then you can go back to it later and look in the mirror and reabsorb it.
Neat.
I haven't had a lot of luck with this practice. But my teacher is a very magical person. And she sort of, she's one of those fae beings that is sort of in this world and sort of in the other world all
the
time.
So it makes more sense for her to be able to do that.
Yeah. But there are ways of using the mirror.
Right.
And personalizing your mirror.
Right.
Just like we talked about with athames and wands and
right.
cups and the pentacle.
Right.
Get a mirror and make it your own. Cleanse
right.
it, decorate it, charge it.
Charge it.
That word was hard to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, one quick thing before we give homework and we are going to be signing off is one of the things you can use, and this is something that, you know, mirrored glasses to use as protection when you go out, when you're in groups of people or you're in places that you don't feel as safe.
Nice.
So
very smart.
Very smart. Modern day.
Yeah.
So our homework for?
Yes, our homework is to get a mirror.
Yes.
Go out and get one. Cleanse it, smoke, you know, smudge it with some sage or give it a nice wash with Florida water or something. And then take a minute and decide, is this going to be a protective mirror or a reflective mirror? And charge it with that energy. Use herbs or oils or whatever feels appropriate for you to charge that as either a protective tool or a tool to help you see, scry, divine. And then start to practice and play.
And play.
And see.
And truly see.
Yes.
And so then we have our history. We have some practical things to do. We have some other information and sources you can go to,
yes.
which is good. We will be doing our show next week live
from
PantheaCon.
We didn't even practice that. That's hilarious.
We're getting kind of, this is like having siblings. You're kind of getting in there.
Yeah.
So we will be doing it. I believe we are going to try and do it an hour earlier and then have it up because Miss Phoenix will be doing a ritual right at 7 o'clock.
Right.
We want her to be able to be there.
Yes, I have a role that will require a little bit of extra attention from me. So, yes. So we are planning to air at 5 next week. And I'm in the conversation with a couple of pagans who have recently released books to come and chat with us and tell us why they love PantheaCon and give a little information about what they're doing. So we'll post on our Facebook page and on our website who is going to be our special pagany guest.
Yeah. And then anyone else we could possibly stress.
Yeah, we'll just grab random people as they walk by and be like, hey.
We need to have you give a session here.
Yeah.
Talk. Say something. Pagany.
Why are you at PantheaCon? What's your name? What are you doing?
Well, we may be a little bit more finessey, but that's okay.
Elvira might. I don't have any finesse.
It depends. We'll see where I'm at. I might get to my Hollywood stage and just do that, like, you know, head a hopper. You know. But anyway, we will see how we get along.
Yeah.
We'll have a lot of fun.
Yes.
And join us.
And if you can make it to PantheaCon, it starts on Friday the 17th in San Jose. It is a 4-day pagan event. There's rituals and workshops and shopping and amazing fun.
Plug your ritual.
Oh,
your workshop.
That's right. At 1:30 on Friday, I am presenting on altars and shrines, and we're going to be making pocket altars to take with you. And then that evening at 7 p.m., I am part of the reclaiming ritual, which we're working with tearing down the web of lies.
Ooh.
Yes. And also, Elvira and myself will be there, and Alan, our cauldron.
Yes,
he will also be there. So if you are at PantheaCon, please come and say hi.
Yes.
And let's get a drink or some French fries or something.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay. Have a wonderful week. See you later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network.
Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.